And then here is the archive this bad boy. Stop archiving. Okay, it automatically started archiving. Okay, so welcome everybody. We should be live on DS106 Radio. We're also here in the actual physical classroom, which seems like an afterthought at this point with this classroom. I mean, the whole thing has been nuts. I don't know how you guys are dealing with it. I don't know how I'm dealing with it. Quick questions. The daily shoot, if your daily shoot didn't show up on the page on DS106, it's because you don't have more than 5 photos in your Flickr account. That's the limitation. That's what happened. Keep that in mind. We had that talk, David. I got your tweets. Twitter is the best way to keep in contact with me. If you're not in Twitter, I don't know what to tell you, because that's where a lot of this activity is happening. And that's where we're discussing with one another a lot of these things on the fly. You'll notice now there's so much stuff coming in that you got to pick and choose what you read and comment on. I'm not expecting you to read everything, but I do want to see you're engaged. Does that make sense? Cool. All right. Well, I am very, 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 very pleased to introduce to you Darcy Norman, who's from the University of Calgary, and he's coming to you live from his living room or basement or somewhere in Calgary to talk to you about photography. Darcy is actually the first person who got me into both Flickr and to the idea of, and the kind of revolution that was surrounding the idea of photography with this new web. When I came to all this in 2004, 2005, you know, all this idea of the photography, video, YouTube, all this, I didn't have a clear sense of it. It's not until I saw someone like Darcy on a regular basis exercising his creative talents as a part of his daily routine that I really started to think differently, not only about what we're doing with Web 2.0 or whatever you want to call it, but what we're doing as individuals and what this space means for our sense of expression. So Darcy has been pivotal in shaping my whole idea, not only about that, but about also sharing back out what one does. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Darcy Norman, who's going to talk to us specifically about photography as digital storytelling. Okay? So Darcy, welcome. Take it away. You got a great bunch here. So.
All right, thanks, Jim. So we all agree on pivotal to just everything, right? We can get that in writing or something. I'm really pleased to be here. I got to say first, I'm just blown away by this whole DS106 phenomenon, whatever the heck this is turning into. It's pretty amazing stuff. I want me to talk a little bit about, well, I'm getting some good echo feedback here. So I'm just going to drop the earbuds out. So Jim asked me to talk a little bit about my experience with photography, taking pictures, sharing a little bit of the creative common things. What happens if you take a picture and put it out on the internet? And oh my goodness, what happens with that? So I'll talk a little bit about that. First, I want to talk a little bit about photography, not as the technical gizmo wizardry thing that people think you need f-stops and apertures and ISOs and all that stuff. Photography, you sort of take a step back from all. What you're actually doing is you're sharing. That's what the act of photography is. I see something a moment in time, I want to share that with my friends, my family, my people that I work with. And that's what pushing that button is doing. Holding the camera, setting the frame of reference and the perspective, and deciding this is a moment that I want to share. And not just a moment, but my perspective on this moment. And that's really in a nutshell, that's what photography is. It's not about the technical stuff. It's not about film speed and gear and how big your camera is. It's about taking the time to find perspectives and to decide to share which moment and then with whom. And that's sort of where we get into what's changed in the last few years online. So really, you're stopping time. That's kind of a cool thing. You say, well, you can maybe do that with video too. With video, you're sharing a sequence. You're sharing sort of a longer moment, where photography is you're saying this particular moment is what I want to share. Video is sort of like more of the shotgun approach. I'm going to share whatever happens between while I'm recording. Whereas photography can be a little more sort of mindful about what exactly you're going to share. It's extremely cheap now. I mean, it used to be you'd have to have your Leica camera with expensive lenses and all this film and processing and all this. It's so cheap. I mean, people now have cell phones that have cameras built into them that are better than cameras people had, dedicated cameras not that long ago. So everybody has access to a camera. You don't have to use a super high-end camera. My sort of good camera is a Canon XT Digital Rebel. It's, I don't know, like 5 years old now. From anybody who's into camera gear, it's a piece of crap. but it's good enough. You know, it does the job. I can point it. I can take pictures. It's got enough quality. Most of the pictures I take, though, lately have been with my iPhone. So even though I've got a sort of reasonably not bad camera, it's sitting neglected in a bag underneath my desk in the basement because I can have my iPhone camera, which is good enough, and it's always with me. And that's the key. When I started taking more pictures, what I really wanted to do, I was initially worried about the technical stuff. And I don't want to be fumbling with apertures and focal lengths and all this kind of stuff. So I wanted to take a picture every day to force myself, you know, to exercise, take the practice, the technical practice of taking a picture. So taking a picture every day forces you to do that. It's easy to take pictures, you know, at birthday parties or on vacation or when interesting stuff is happening. Forcing yourself to do it with the routine and the regimen, and that's where the daily shoot comes in, which is really interesting. But that abstracts you away from the content and into sort of the mechanics of it. So you get to think more about composition. What does it mean to play with the light, and you know, how do you frame things? So that makes you do that, but it also makes you practice the mechanical stuff. What does the focal length mean? How zoomy am I going to be? Am I going to do up close? Am I going to be wide angle? Sorry, zoomy is a very technical term there. But shooting every day, it forces you to do that technical stuff enough that it just sort of drops off the radar. After a while, you don't think about it anymore. And that's sort of why I wanted to keep doing the photo a day. I'm now on my fifth year of it. I call it 365 photos. So a photo a day for an entire year. I'm now on year five. I mean, the technical stuff is, it's a non-issue now. Yeah, I sort of think about it, but it's not why you take pictures. It doesn't matter anymore. Using a camera in full auto, using an iPhone camera is completely good enough. Yes, it would be better if you have the fanciest new Canon 5D Mark II with, you know, off-camera flash and all that crap. But that can also get in the way, too, because you've got to lug around 40 pounds of stuff and, you know, charge batteries and get, you know, you have to deal with that. So having the things like an iPhone camera, these Android phones, the cameras are good enough, and that's great. The other really amazing thing that they let you do is they let you share your photographs really easily. When I was a kid, I mean, predating probably all you guys in the class, but we used to have slides in a carousel. And so my dad would take pictures on his, at the time, really high-end camera. He had a Pentax Spotmatic, which, an amazing camera, by the way. But anyways, so he would take a bunch of pictures. He would have to have them developed, loaded up onto slides. He'd put them in the carousels, and we'd go in the basement. We'd set up the projector, and we'd have to sit there and watch all of the pictures, you know, click. New picture, click, new picture. And it was a real pain, you know, between the time we're at the zoo and he's making us pose in the monkey cage to the time we get to see the photo projected on the wall, weeks. Now you take a picture on your phone, you load up Instagram, and boom, it's on the internet 5 seconds later, and how many, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of people see it that easily. So the tight feedback loop between when you take a picture, when you see it, and when you can get feedback is amazingly tight now, something that was, I mean, we've never seen that before. It's so cheap, anybody can do this. You know, you don't need a lot of gear. I mean, you can use an off-the-shelf camera that costs less than $100, or you can use the phone that you got in your pocket. It really doesn't matter. And creating this really tight feedback loop where people are sharing, people are commenting and using and reusing, it's something that we've never been able to do because the mechanics of processing film for photography previously was just so expensive and, you know, chemically intense, and it takes time. But what's kind of happened is we're blurring what's amateur and pro. I mean, when I do take my non-sucky camera out, people look at it and they think, oh, he's a pro photographer. No, I'm not. I've got a camera that, you know, it's several years old. It's got some okay gear, but I'm not a pro. I'm an amateur. I just have fun with it. That's actually the way I want it. I would hate to have to make money on it because that would suck the fun out of it. I mean, I think that would be the worst thing in my life for me taking photographs of something is to have to do it. And to have to do it to please somebody else as opposed to just wanting to do it because I want to take a picture of something. So yeah, this whole amateur versus pro thing is blurred. Now, what happens when you put a photograph that you take and throw it on Flickr? Well, I've had a few that have actually been picked up. They've been used. One was used in a movie. One was used in a ballet, I believe, in Denver. The Denver Ballet was using it for something as background during one of their shows. I didn't see any for that. But I mean, how cool is that? You take a picture of something, and it's being used at the back of this, you know, pretty high-end, fine art performance. out of LA. That's amazing. I've got stuff that's been used in movies and DVDs and books and stuff. Occasionally, they send you a copy of something. So I've got some. I've got this thing here called "It's My Life: A Guide to Alternatives After High School." It was done by I don't know, a government agency somewhere, and they used one of my photographs, which is kind of cool. This was something that was used in high school curriculum, and so they sent me a copy just to see what it looks like. That's kind of cool. I mean, little kind of perks like that. Yeah, I would never make money off it, but I don't want to make money off it. I do it for fun. And that really kind of changes. What does it mean to be amateur versus professional? I have a job. I don't need to make money off photography. I don't want to make money off. Some people do. I mean, that's okay. But for me, my motivation to do it is entirely, well, I guess selfish. I do it for me because I enjoy it. And not because somebody's saying, hey, here's a camera, go take a picture of this thing that doesn't really matter and make it look like this. And so photography, it's cheap, it's fast, it's mobile, it's extremely personal, and it's pervasive, it's everywhere. So you can take photographs of what you want, when you want, for any reason that you want, share it or not, and the decisions now are completely up to you. There was a time where if you wanted to share a photograph widely, the only way to do that was to get it in a magazine, to have a book produced. I have an aunt, actually, who recently decided she wants to have some photographs that she took shared. So what she did is she got in with this company where she got to give them something like $1,500, and they printed a bunch of her photographs as postcards to sell in stores. That was the old model. If you want to share your photographs, you need to sink some cash and kill a bunch of trees and stuff and try and sell photos. Now get a Flickr account and dump stuff up there so people can see it. Throw some tags on it, throw the geolocation on so people can know where they are. A lot of my stuff is found that way because the iPhone automatically puts the geolocation on there. So people can say, show me a photograph of Lake Louise. And oh, there's a photograph I can use. So that can be really handy. So it's so insanely easy to share and it's so personal. But I was talking before about photography being more than just the technical stuff. And this is something when I first got my digital SLR camera. I decided I wanted to think a little more deeply about what I was doing with photography as opposed to just the technical stuff. So I was thinking about what kind of books I should be reading. I talked to people and they suggested reading the Susan Sontag essays on photography. And I'd never seriously read Sontag before, so I wasn't biased either way. So I figured, okay, sure, I'll pick it up and read that. And there's I think eight essays that she wrote in the 70s largely. And it really changed how I see photography. A lot of the essays are talking, I mean, they're sort of off, you could be seen as radical off the deep end, talking about the violence of photography and whatnot, but they made me understand differently the relationship, the interaction that happens when you take a picture. You walk down the street with a camera, you point it at someone, and that changes the relationship. You're not just walking down the street anymore. You are engaging that person, whether or not they know it, and you are giving something from to them, you're taking something from them, and there is this sort of transaction that happens. And for me, I'm a chicken. I don't do street photography very well because I get scared of that transaction. I don't want to put people off. I don't want to be seen as the creepy guy with the camera on the street, so I sort of avoid that. But there are people that manage that relationship fabulously. On the page that I've got on the screen, if you have it open, scroll down. There's one, James, I won't scroll here because it seems to hang up on screen if I scroll too fast. But there's a guy named James Tworo in Calgary. And he does amazing street photography because he's mastered the art of handling this relationship between the photographer and the subject so well. And when he takes a picture, he doesn't just walk down the street and go click, click, click. He sits down and he talks and he learns about the people and he has a conversation. They become not friends, but they get to know each other a bit. And then as that happens, that relationship is there. That's when the photographs happen. He's not taking something from them. They build it together. And he gets absolutely amazing street photography out of that. It's a very difficult thing to get into, to get your head around what that relationship is. And it can be very daunting. That's why I don't do much street photography myself, because it's a big thing to do. But definitely, if you want to think more about that relationship, check out the Sontag Essays in On Photography. It's a very, very good read. Take it with a huge grain of salt, but there's some great stuff in there. The other one that's fantastic for reading about sort of the philosophy of photography is this one called The Tao of Photography by Philip Gross and Shapiro. And that one, kind of set me off on this whole mindful seeing thing, reading that. So it's sort of like, you know, Zen and the Art of Photography kind of thing. And I won't go into much depth, but definitely check that one out. There's a link on here if you want to see on Amazon. It's not an affiliate link or anything. Go ahead and check it out. Those are two of the books I recommend highly. Just because they sort of, for me, help set up what am I doing with photography. And trying to get past the sort of techno-pretentious, hey, I'm a photographer kind of thing, look what I can do with a camera, because that's not what it's about. And once you get past that, it becomes fun just for fun's sake. You get back to the sharing perspective, the stopping time, the bending time and space to share what you're seeing and what you're experiencing, these specific moments with people that you choose. And for me, that's the fun of it all. It's not about, you know, megapixels and all that kind of stuff. That's all sort of gravy on it that makes it work maybe a little bit better. It's maybe lubricant for the stuff, but it's really about what you're doing with this stuff. The biggest thing I can recommend is to immerse yourself in photography. Don't immerse yourself in the techno babble. Like, don't read the Dummy's Guide to Taking Pictures. You know, throw that kind of crap away. Immerse yourself in photography. And one thing I did was I followed a whole bunch of RSS feeds, subscription. There's a link to the file at the bottom there that has all of my feeds, a good chunk of the feeds that I follow. So I followed a bunch of those websites managed by photojournalists, by all kinds of people that create photographs, that find photographs and bring them together, and you use them to tell stories. And just constantly seeing every day, I see probably thousands of images, photographs that people are taking because of these feeds. And just they become sort of immersed. You absorb this stuff. You see how people use light. You can see how people approach stories. You can see how they share moments, how they handle things like, how do you share a sense of emotion, a sense of joy? How do you do this? And seeing that it is possible people can do this. It's not just, you know, this photo's blurry, so throw it out. No, maybe it's blurry, but it's good because it can share a feeling, it can share emotions. Some of my favorite photographs that I've taken are technically garbage. They should be deleted by any respectable photographer. But because I've sort of seen these flaws as actually sharing the emotion and the feeling, they become my most cherished photographs. One is actually, I think it's actually a gym at a party in Vancouver. At Brian Lamb's house, and he was in the kitchen, and Jim was laughing, and he's throwing his head back, and I just happened to have a camera, and I hit the shutter, and it's a long exposure because it was a dark room, so of course Jim's all blurred, but it absolutely captured that. I'll see if I can find that one later, but don't worry about the technical stuff. The technical stuff doesn't matter if what you're getting is this emotion, the shared moment, and that's really what it's all about for me. I think I'll probably stop rambling there. What do people want to talk about? I'm sort of set out where I'm coming from technology, from photography is not specifically technology. Where do you guys want to go with this conversation?
I'm going to start it, Darcy. Darcy, can you hear me?
Yep.
Cool. I'm going to start it a little bit because one of the things that fascinates me, and I'm not a photographer at all, and I do enjoy this, and how many of you are enjoying so far the daily shoot process, right? I mean, this is a fun assignment, and it's a fun assignment because we get to see how we see everything else. One of the things you've written, Darcy, that has kind of got me excited is your process, what you go through, like how many photos do you take a day, how often on average. You go through a very kind of, you're an intense documenter. You document how many photos you took for the year, what photos you liked, what photos you didn't, how many you delete, how many you keep. But then, like, so out of the 20,000 photos that Darcy took in a year, he kept, I don't know how many, but he decided of 20,000 photos, 70 were good. So think about that ratio. Can you talk a little bit about that process? Because I have some follow-up questions on that, but I want to hear a bit about that process of your selection. How do you do it? What happens after you take the photo?
Well, let me just see if I'll break Skype. I'm going to launch Aperture. I put all my photographs in Aperture. It's a program for Mac OS that is... for managing photos. It's kind of like iPhoto with a few more bells and whistles. And basically all that numbers and stuff comes out of Aperture. So what I do is I create, I don't know if it's on your screen yet.
It is.
Okay, so I've got, on the side, I've got these projects for each year. So 2011 right now is 199 photos in there. 2010, there was 2,000 photos that I've kept. I tend to delete about 90% of the photos that I take when I take a photo, I don't just take one. I take like five or so in a row, you know, different angles, different, you know, just experimenting to see what it looks like. A lot of what I do when I take a picture isn't necessarily that I think this is going to be a great shot. I'm curious what it's going to look like. What would it look like if I hold the camera down here and take a look close to the snow? What would it look like if I take a look through the shadow behind this tree as the sun sets behind it? I don't know. Let's find out. So a lot of the shots that I take are experiments, and as a result, a lot of the shots that I take completely suck, and so they get deleted. Occasionally, a shot doesn't suck. Like actually, here's the one from yesterday's daily shoot. This was actually, I was getting home from work and we were stopping at the local grocery store here just to grab some stuff on the way home, walked by the little sushi stand at the end of the deli, and this jumped out at me. This was repetition. So I don't even think I stopped, just leaned over and clicked and kept going because I had to chase my 8-year-old. So I don't know, this is neat. I wonder what this looked like. Click and keep going. So I mean, things like that. Let's see if I can scroll down. Yeah, so this is aperture. I won't scroll too much because it's probably going to break Skype. Here's another one.
It's working beautifully on our end.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So this is, I'm riding home from work one day along the top of the Bow River Valley, and the sun is setting towards the west, and I'm wondering, you know, it's a pretty bright sun. I wonder what it looked like if I try and capture that. I bet there's going to be a lens flare. It could look kind of cool. So normally they teach you, if you're worried about the technical aspects of photography, never shoot into the sun. Never shoot into a bright light. You'll get a lens flare. Oh, my God, end of the world. So I figure, screw that, let's take a picture and see what it looks like. And the fun stuff you get with that, yeah, the sun's all blown out, but you get, you know, all this kind of cool stuff in the shadows, and the silhouette of these little Rocky Mountains sort of peaks through here. So you get to play with the fun silhouettes and shadows and whatnot, and lens flares. And so the experimentation like that is kind of the fun thing. Last weekend, my son and I went down just to play at we've got a field not far from my house, and we were just goofing around in the snow for an hour or two. And I've got the phone with me, so I wound up taking probably 30 or 40 pictures there, deleting a bunch, just, you know, what would it look like with the snow up close? Well, that's what snow looks like up close when you've got the sun setting on the other side of it. So taking a bunch of stuff, as I go through, I usually wait a little time. Like the 2010 library won't be useful for this part because it's still too recent. But as I go through to the, like, last year's library, I go through and I rate them. I try not to do it too recently, too much, too soon after I take the picture, because you're too close to it. Then you value pictures more for the personal, emotional value versus the qualities of the photo itself. So this is actually something I learned from Winogrand, where that he actually took a bunch of photo, like rolls and rolls of the film, and didn't even develop them for at least a year. I mean, this is a guy, you know, long time ago, years and years ago. Very prolific street photographer, doing a lot of great stuff, but he would fill rolls of film and then stick them in a filing cabinet, undeveloped for at least a year. And he did that because he didn't want to review the photographs while he still had the personal emotional connection with them. So although the emotional connection is valuable, when you're looking at rating, you want to be objective. So when I want to look back at the photos that I've taken and say which ones are really good, if I'm sharing those really good photos with anybody else, they don't have that personal emotional connection to the photograph. So I need to be able to separate myself from that. And so what I do is I go through and I look at use the star rating. So basically a one-star photo doesn't suck. So out of the one-star photos are better, there's 672 in 2010. Star photos, yeah, they're not bad. So we're up to 242. All the way up to, seems to be a good thing over here. If we go to 5-star, these are the ones that are, well, I'm sick, I didn't use 5-star for 2000, so I probably stopped at 4-star. But basically what I do is I go through all 2000 photographs. The ones that don't suck get 1-star. And then I say, show me only the 1-star photos. The ones that are, you know, the ones that are not so great out of that don't get 2-stars. So I keep upvoting photos in each series until I get to 4 or 5 stars. And as you do that, you start to separate the personal collection. So this is the first one that I took. This is actually at a Home Depot. I had a wide-angle lens. I was just actually quickly grabbing something with my son. Happened to have my camera with a wide angle. Took a shot. And so, you know, things like that. A long exposure in a hallway at the university. So motion blur. This was kind of hard to do because I wasn't using a tripod. But it's kind of a neat shot. As you separate the emotional connection away, You get to see shots that you think other people might think are technically good as well as having an emotional impact. So we get things like, here's my son on Lake Louise, which I don't know, you might have seen photos of Lake Louise. This is a very iconic location in the Canadian Rockies. It's an epic, epic location. So if you're there, there's actually glaciers way up here. It's a beautiful location if you get a chance. But I mean, it's kind of interesting. There's the hockey net in the background. You know, what's he looking at? He's bundled up. He's obviously cold, but he's still out there on the ice having fun. So what's going on? That kind of stuff. Or here's a mime from Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. I mean, the expression on his face. What are these people in the crowd looking at? He's obviously engaging somebody behind me. You know, what are the sounds? That kind of draws you in. So as you go through and you start rating and reviewing your photos, you start to be able to critique more objectively. And that's critical to what you're doing here. If you're looking to sort of improve as not only the technical aspect of photography, but from the communication side, what are you trying to do with your photographs? And so going through and doing this rating, objective rating, is a really difficult process. And how do you go through, in this case, there was 2,022 photos from last year, and wind up with 70 that are 4 stars? And of this, if I went through again, I could probably get that down to maybe, I don't know, 50 or 60. I'd drop a few of them. Like this one of the bird, I mean, so that's, I would have dropped that one, and I would have maybe dropped this one of the sailboat. But as you go, you can get that. But it's an iterative process. That's my son at the train station downtown, the light rail transit station. And we were going to the zoo after that day, so I just out of nowhere I took a picture. It's kind of interesting with the colors. This is a case where the emotional impact probably colored me a little more than it should. I threw this on Flickr, and the next day the new mayor of Calgary, who was very active in social media during the election, marked it as a favorite. And I told my son Evan that, who was rooting for the mayor during the election, and it just blew him away. You know, I could take a photo just for something to do on a trip to the zoo, throw it on Flickr, and the mayor would mark it as a favorite photo that he'd use for something. That kind of blew him away. So you know, those kinds of connections are neat.
That's pretty cool. And Darcy, one of the things that, I mean, as you're talking, one of the things I'm thinking about, and it also for me frames, I mean, the importance of the work we're doing. I've gotten asked a question just by email the other day, like, how are we going about grades in this class, right? It came up. And your process is fascinating to me because that is a process of self-evaluation taken to the nth degree. You have 20,000 photos, and you actually are the one who is filtering your work. It's not a competitive process. It's not saying mine isn't as good as X or isn't as good as Y. It's what are the best photos of mine? And what's interesting, as I've been watching you as a photographer over the years, Darcy, is the way in which your subjects change from year to year. Like over the last, I'd say, year or two, you've been spending a lot of time on landscapes, right? Mm-hmm. And there's also this kind of evolution of your own photography that you'll never really develop if you're constantly thinking about your photography in relationship to what's better or who's better, et cetera, or what is people considering good. It's almost like you create a voice with the blog, you're creating your own eye or a unique eye through this.
Well, there's kind of a danger. I mentioned in one of the links on that page that I shared, to follow things like the Flickr interestingness.
Yeah.
Do you know about the interestingness thing? So Flickr has this magic sauce that it uses to figure out which are the best, sort of more interesting photos recently. And it does things by numbers of times the photo's been viewed, number of times people have marked it as a favorite or commented or added notes to it. Whatever the magic algorithm it is, it sort of figures out what does the population of Flickr think are the most interesting photos of the last 24 hours, 7 days, month, etc. And although it's watching that interestingness feed is amazing because you see a huge variety of stuff, it's also kind of, I don't know, confusing because you get to see what the crowd sees as good. And what you often get is, you know, you get the cleavage shots, you get a lot of, you know, it's very predictable what's going to get voted up as popular because everyone looks at the movie pictures. So avoiding that kind of stuff is, if you want to be a popular photographer, it's very easy to game the system and do that. You just, you know, need access to some cleavage and then boom, you're a popular photographer. Being able to separate from that and say, I don't care about that. I'm interested to see the other kinds of things that people find interesting, but I'm also interested to see what I find interesting and the people that I care about, what they find interesting. And sort of finding that voice. And my work, well, largely because most of the pictures I've been taking have been either at, you know, events or during my bike commute, riding my bike to and from work. And so that is why a lot of them are landscapes, because I'm in landscapes a lot. So I'm a street photographer because I'm rarely in an environment where that is possible. I live in the suburbs, so there aren't a lot of people on the streets. I rarely get downtown, so I don't get, I'm not in that environment. So the environment that I'm in is the landscapes, or, on campus, or birthday parties, that kind of stuff. So that affects what you do. And so what I decided, instead of struggling against that, I'm going to own that. If I happen to be in the landscapes a lot, great, that's what I shoot. I happen to enjoy being in it. So and I think that sort of connection comes through as well. It's not a forced thing. It's not, I'm going to learn to be a landscape photographer. It's not, that's where I am. That's what I'm going to be sharing, because the people that I care about are interested in what the moments that I share, and vice versa. The moments that I share happen to be the moments that I'm in, which are largely landscape. That was a very rambling description of what goes on. But yeah, and a lot of it is playing, like things like this one here. This is a duck pond near the university, and it was autumn last year. I didn't know what it would turn out. I wondered what the reflection looked like. I wondered if you'd be able to see the stones in there. It was kind of cool. But that got a bunch of play on Flickr.
Didn't Sorry. You take that one with your iPhone?
Yeah, most of these are iPhone, actually. This is iPhone. I think all the ones on the screen are iPhone.
I was taking a picture for the first time with, my Rebel that I stole from work. And I saw that you did that with an iPhone, and I wanted to stop. Because I couldn't even take something like that with a Rebel. Pissed me off.
Well, you could. That's the thing. Yeah, you should stop, by the way. No. I'm kidding. Give your wife the camera, because she rocks.
She does, right?
She does. And she shoots some amazing black and white. No, it's the stuff you shoot. It's good. It's the camera you use, although it sounds cliched, the camera doesn't matter as much as taking the time to see something and to share that moment. If you see things that are interesting, you can take an interesting picture with just about any camera.
Let me ask you this. Has Flickr, you use Flickr heavily. Most of your photos are up on Flickr, if not all of them, and then they pipe into Mindful Seeing. But has Flickr changed, or is it somehow warped your sense of what's good or not because you get comments, favorites? I mean, does that play into it? I mean, you have this insane, you have a lot of contacts on Flickr. You have a lot of people who look at your photos on a regular basis. How does that inform what you're doing?
Well, for a while there, I fell into that trap, where I wanted to get photos in the interestingest thing, so I was trying to take that kind of picture, and then I realized I didn't like that feeling. Because, I could take the kind of picture, the beautiful sunset with something in the foreground, blah, 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 and know that, if I add it to the proper groups and tag it with the proper keywords and promote it properly, it'll bubble up on interestingness. Then I realized that the act of taking the picture was more playing a game to get up on the page as opposed to sharing these moments. And so I stopped doing that. I actually used to keep photo sets for interesting photos, interestingness photos that were photos that I'd taken each year got added to the interestingness mix. And I've actually stopped doing that because I don't care. Last year, I think I only got 3. The year before that, I got, like a dozen or so. So I've stopped trying. My photos haven't changed. They don't suck anymore now than they did last year, but I've stopped playing the game, and all of a sudden my photos aren't interesting. So I really, I don't care about that anymore.
Yeah. Now, that's a good point about the gaming. Now, when you started, I thought it was Alan Levine, but he kind of confirmed, as he always does, that everything he ever got was from you.
Well, again, let's confirm that I am the center of everything.
That's right. Daily Shoot. Because I got that from a blog post by Alan, which in turn came from you. Why'd you start doing Daily Shoot? What was the mind behind it? What advice do you have for the folks out there? They're doing it. This is the second day of a 2-week process they'll be going through of a Daily Shoot every day. Everyone has to do it.
Right.
Everyone has to tag it. You know the story. So what's your experience with Daily Shoot?
Well, Daily Shoots was started by a photographer by the name of James Duncan Davidson and his partner that unfortunately forget the name, so, and the other guy. We actually did code for the site. The programmers don't matter. It's the visionary that matters. So yeah, James Duncan Davidson is just an amazing photographer. He actually was one of the leads on the Java Ant project for building for doing automated builds of software. So he was actually a hardcore geek, moved into photography, and he's an amazing teacher and communicator on what it is to take pictures and what does photography mean. And when people start to do these photo a day projects, they often, it's a New Year's resolution, whatever, they start, and then they stumble, a couple of weeks in, they stop doing it. Well, why do you do that? Well, I don't know what to take a picture of. I don't see anything interesting. And so Davidson decided, well, what I'm going to do is give some prompts. And so they built a website, and all it basically does is say, book. Take a picture of a book today. You'll see a book somewhere today. Take a picture of it. Motion. Take a picture that says motion. And so that's all it does. It gives you the prompt. And it's just to help you to stay on the wagon, taking a photo every day. It's not the Bataan Death March. If you miss a day, you don't get to go to the club or anything. But the Daily Issue Project is just that prompt, that nudge. Here's the thing that you don't think you're going to find anything interesting today, but look for leaves. Look for glass. You'll find this if you look for it. And so what it does is it trains you to look for things. And what you'll find, if you keep doing, maybe, I don't know if you'll find it in the first week, but if you keep doing it, you're gonna find that your mind works differently, your eye works differently. And you will see things that you didn't see previously. You'll interpret things differently than you would have otherwise. By having this exercise of this prompt leading you and guiding you through, you're going to find yourself making, you're going to be not just finding shots to take. You're going to be saying, I know where I can find glass. I know where I can find translucent light, whatever. And you're going to go out of your way to find these shots. It's going to make you think about this stuff. And that's kind of exciting. I did the Daily Shoot I was actually just on the Daily Shoot site today. I did it not right from the beginning, but pretty close. And I did every day. But I sort of fell off that wagon. And the reason I did that is because I didn't like the prompt anymore, the external prompt. It comes down to photography in one aspect for me is a selfish thing. It's my thing. And I didn't like that somebody was telling me, well, let's take pictures of. And so although it got me past that hurdle, I got to a point where for me, and it doesn't, absolutely, it's different for everybody. For me, I didn't like that prompt anymore. And so I withdrew from that project, but I still did my photo a day project as I was going.
And it's interesting because speaking of the photo a day, I actually, when we did this last semester, we did it for 8 days. And I came, did it those 8 days. And then I came in and out of it over the next probably 4 months until we're here again. And one of the things I really liked about Daily Shoot, not only is that it got me seeing and excited because I usually don't take photos regularly, but it allowed me to actually focus on things around me. Like just going and looking at my desk to take today's photo was awesome.
Your photo today was perfect.
I mean, right? It's just a bobblehead of the Vision, one of the great Marvel comic heroes right there, and a close-up, and I felt like I did something, which is odd. Now, the other thing is that I wanted to think about is the Daily Shoot also as a model for training, as a model for inspiring, as a model for kind of suggesting you can come in and do things as you see and then move on, is kind of how I modeled the open part of this whole class. I mean, I thought when we did it last semester and I saw how excited people got about seeing their own photos and the photos of everyone else in the class, as well as people beyond the class, it actually changed the whole way I thought about this class in some real way. And that came out of the model of Daily Shoot, which is a distributed kind of open schoolhouse. It's like a little red schoolhouse on the web saying, you want to learn how to how to be a photographer or how to be or get better at taking pictures? Take this prompt and do it daily. And this idea of repetition, which is why I thought it was so cool that the first day of this class, the theme was repetition. You know, because for me, it's the idea of doing it regularly. And it's also this idea of learning that a ton of stuff you're going to take, and you're the model for this, 90% is garbage. And
the magic of Daily Shoot, it's the prompt, but it's also this really cool kind of safe place to do this.
Yeah.
You're not setting up an art gallery somewhere where you're making prints and sticking in the wall, waiting to be judged. Oh my God, they're going to think this is terrible. No, it's a very low threshold, safe place. Take a picture, throw it up here. We'll give you some feedback. Or maybe not, I don't know. It depends what people do that day. But anybody can do this. It costs nothing. There's no risk. You can put your name to it or you could use a pseudonym. It doesn't matter. It's this really groovy kind of photo sharing party. And it's got this analog in DS-106 Radio. I mean, I think there's a lot of parallels there. It's this groovy place to share and sort of throw things up there and just sort of play together.
I agree. Now, how many of you, when you put your stuff on Flickr, how many of you already got feedback from someone who may not be in this class? All right. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So at least, roughly half, a little less than half, already got feedback from people who aren't even part of this class. And I found that across it. But, I mean, that to me, let me ask you also, when someone comments on your photo, right, does that make you more likely to take another one? Absolutely. I can't say this enough in this class, and now we're going to do a lot of our commenting on Flickr, but we're also going to do it in the blogosphere. Don't expect me to comment on every blog. I'm expecting you to comment on each other's stuff. I'm expecting you to be that unmet friend for someone out there you don't know who's giving feedback. If you're looking to me as like the kind of figure that's going to show up and say, good work, fine job, go get him. It's just not even practical in this class anymore. Even if I wanted to, it's not going to happen. Right? Be the ball, to quote Chevy Chase. Be the ball. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Right? All right. Let's get some questions for Darcy about photography. Stuff you've been doing, stuff you've been working with. What's going on with you? The photo shoot, what's been your experience? What are some questions you have for Darcy? Let's open this up now. Anyone want to show off their photos? Huh? Silence? Yes, and speak up, please. Stephanie, this is Stephanie Dawson.
Hello.
Hi, Stephanie.
How do you feel about stage photographs versus something that's just very natural?
The question
Stage photographs versus natural, yeah. I think they're both awesome. They do different things. My stuff isn't staged because I'm lazy. I'm just going to go back. There's a page here on, or a link from the page that I put up here. Di Bedard does some staged photographs with Lego. And so she takes Star Trek Lego. I don't know if this is loading for you guys here, but she takes Star Trek Lego and you know, figurines and whatnot and creates these little sort of diorama scenes. And that's what she's been taking some really kind of cool photographs of. And she also does, has that loaded for you guys?
We can't see it yet, but it will come
yeah,
in.
Okay.
You've been
I'll give it
good.
A minute. I'll stop scrolling around and let it load. But, you know, she's sort of creating this narrative scenes of a play of these Star Trek characters. So in the scene, Picard is down and Dr. Crusher is trying to do something. And, you know, Data is doing something on this giant tricorder. Now, she also posts, which is really cool, the making of. So I'm just going to switch tabs and let it load for a minute. And when that loads, it shows sort of how she did it. So this is a very staged photograph. She's using her computer, her laptop screen as the background, so the bridge itself. And she's got, you know, holding the lights and all that. So she's sort of giving away her secret sauce and how she did this, which is kind of cool. So staged photographs, I think, are great. Personally, I'm too lazy to do that. But that's my thing.
And your screen is creating a nice pixelated mashup of Flickr and Star Wars and Star Trek. Oh yeah, there it is. I mean, David, you did a nice stage photograph for your first day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we had David Noel, right?
Yeah.
Did a first one, and it's an actually interesting, really interesting photo. Who else saw it? David's photo. Oh, let me describe it and tell me if you've seen it. It's got a calendar, and on the calendar. Right, and doing repetition in the middle. There's or on, off to the side. There's a watch. You guys see that? So if you don't know what it is. That's that guy over there in the back. Right. That was a nice stage photo. And one of the things that immediately hit me when I was looking at that photo was, you know, I spend my time like Darcy. I'm lazy. I do whatever I want. I'm not as good as Darcy. I catch whatever. Whatever. It's fun. But it's interesting to see that when you take the point of talking about repetition, and you take the watch, and then you take the calendar. And immediately when I saw that as something that's not even literally in the actual photograph, it was actually an abstraction out, for me, of the repetition of time. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a whole different thing I haven't explored, but you've inspired me to explore this, is how do I start taking photos that are kind of like conceptual, not like beautiful? Although that wasn't, it was beautiful enough, but it wasn't about the beauty. It was about the idea. So what was your thinking, David, behind that? I'd like to know. Yeah. Has everyone read and commented on the blog post? What are they doing? Okay, good.
Well, I was just thinking about repetition.
And speak up, because there's people who want to hear it.
I'm just thinking, what about a clock? I mean, it goes around and around, and it's always the same, but it's different. It's a different experience, a different time of the day. But at the same time, it's the same. It repeats itself. So I tried playing around with some clocks and arranging clocks, cell phones.
And I love not only that, but I love your narrative and commentary on it. But it actually goes back to what you've been saying, Darcy, about this idea of photography and time. How do those two interact for you? I'm really
photography and time?
Yeah. Because here we have the conceptual capturing of time, but what is photography in relationship to time?
Well, it's kind of fun when you play with that. And I've got, I was trying to see if I can pull up, let's see, we have a photograph of mine called, I call it bike blur, but basically it's messing around with time while I'm riding a bike. So this is me riding my bike and wondering, how do I convey this feeling of speed, of motion, of moving quickly? And, you know, you could do it as a video, you could do it that kind of thing. But if I just hold my wide-angle lens down low so it gets close to the asphalt and take a long exposure and just see what happens. And as a result, I don't know if the photo's up on the screen yet, but you get this feel of you're moving quickly through space. You can almost feel the wind blowing past you. You can hear the asphalt grinding under the tire and the bike. And so playing with time, technically, you'd probably want to have a faster shutter so that you'd stop time, so that it was, everything went sharp, you could see the detail of the spokes, etc. But by letting go, and so let's play along this project, let's play with time now and see what happens. You can sort of convey that feeling of emotion and excitement and energy.
Yeah, and that's a nice, there's a really good example right there of the way in which the wheel is moving, yet it's captured in time, right? I mean, that's all.
I wouldn't recommend doing this, but when I did this, I had $1,000 worth of camera gear strapped to my hand, leaning down and riding about 30 kilometers an hour on a public road.
You're
not
like
a recommended
man photographers.
So play, but do it safely, kids.
Yes, exactly. No, that is absolutely very cool. We had another one, Colleen, I think it was your photo, but I'm not sure. We had one which captured, it would almost look like it was out of a Hitchcock film. Is that right? Yeah, the stairs. We had this beautiful shot taken. Where did you take that? In the parking garage?
In the UNW apartments.
Of the actual stairs going infinitely down, right? There's just this one at the top. And I said, this is stuff I see all the time. I spend all my days around stairs and elevators and stuff. And it wasn't until you captured that moment that I'm like, not only did I kick myself in the ass, like, why didn't I take that? But at the other side, I'm like, wow, then this is happening all around. Right? This is constantly what we're seeing. And you can actually get some of the photos. Darcy, I like where you are. If you scroll up, right, you're on the DS106 site. Go to the Daily Shoot.
On the tab.
Next to the wiki, yeah, in the tab. Oh, there, that's even perfect. Right, and we'll start seeing some of them. The Daily Shoot.
442 or 443?
Let's go to 442. I think there's more up there. 443
is better, right?
Yeah, 442 is the repetition one, so that's at least the one I'm talking about. So here we are. There should be more than that. Hopefully they'll come in. It's probably loading. But the one I was talking about is, and this one is great. Who took the Hershey Kish one? Was that you, Stephanie? Right? Those red foils and the way they're standing out in that close-up. This part of the class kind of gave me chills. Because when I come, it's like every time, it's like an unseen present. I go to yours and I'm like, that's so cool. Why didn't I think about it?
Yeah.
Right? And I'm always kind of thinking about it personally, like, why didn't I do that? Which is kind of a ridiculous way to approach it, but that's kind of how I approach things.
Or like this one. What does it look like? Was that a...
Okay, we're back on the air, DS106, and with Darcy.
Hello.
Hey, they can actually see you now.
We have video now.
Hey, right?
I mean, like my teaching vest and my
that's
bachelor group.
That's the creepy guy in our computer that's been pretending to be a 14-year-old.
What are you wearing?
Exactly. Stop! You're scaring me. This is a class, damn it.
Oh, sorry.
We're at a
I'm
university.
Trying to get you fired. That's all. I'm going to share my screen again so you don't have to look at me.
Oh, come on. It's so beautiful. No, but if you go back to that DS106 space and we'll look at some of those photos, the problem, a couple of things here while we're here, Darcy, and I appreciate you entertaining this, is here we're on the DS442. A couple of things while we're talking about this. This is going to go on for 2 weeks. I need you to not only in Flickr put in DS106 for the class tag, but also DS442, 443, 444. You get the point. The point is, here, if you don't have 5 photos, it's not going to show up in this feed yet. Once you have 5 photos or more, it will show up here, and that's the problem we ran into, David. Did you have less than 5 photos at that point? Okay. So if you want, just take 4 quick photos, and Darcy won't get mad if you don't throw them away just yet. So that you can actually have them, and we can actually start getting everything sharing into here. I was thinking for a second, this isn't working. It's working fine. This is one place to see your photos on the site. It's not the only place. You can also go to the actual dailyshoot.com site, which I recommend because you'll, you know, serendipitously discover someone else's photos from somewhere else, not necessarily just about this class. But there's enough people in the DS-106 experience for you to see a whole wide range of stuff. Now, Darcy, you were going to talk about a photo before we got cut off, so why don't you do that now?
We were talking about experimenting, just sort of seeing. There's one, it looks like it's inside a piano.
Oh, yeah,
and so it looked like someone just, hey, what's it look like if I stuck my camera in there? And you get some really cool stuff. That's a very interesting photo because let's explore and see what something looks like.
Well, and I really like the staged. I mean, there were some kind of fun staged ones. It looked like someone had a party with these things. What are they called again? These crazy colored things? Califa Beach, isn't this you? Shot glasses?
Yeah.
What do you think this is? They're these crazy colored shot glasses. And I was like, how come shot glasses just took over my Flickr streak? Or whatever that was, right? But those were fun. And you had this kind of like series going on, right?
Yeah.
And it almost looked like Keith Haring as a shot glass, right? Like that crazy artist. But there's this other one, this Pop-Tarts, right?
Yeah.
This kind of like staged. And I was looking at it, and I was like, this could be like an advertisement. Right, it was very well staged, it was very crisp, right? Very nicely done. All right, Darcy, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's your class.
No, I mean, but it's also cool, like, sit on this one. Click on the one you were talking about, that red one up here. It's up in the top row, second from the right, and don't sit on anything, because Shannon's here laughing hysterically. Anything that's sexual innuendo. You're going to get me fired here. I'm a professional,
get
damn it.
Fired.
All right. I will get myself fired. So go to that one with the plates. You see that? It's the top row far to the right.
Yep, got it.
Okay, let's see. If you click on it, let's see if that shows up here for us.
We're probably dealing with the Canadian bandwidth limits here.
Yeah, you Canadians, right?
I know.
No bandwidth up there. Have we stole all that?
We have it. It's just very spendy.
I know. The data plans there must be. What I'm hearing after this DS-106 radio, it's crazy. But okay, I don't know why, but that's not working. I really like this one. This one with the carpet and the lines on the carpet, the shadows. And one of the things I think is great about the Daily Shoot experience is the inspiration that just looking at everyone else's work provides and affords, right? And actually, you know, the next time I go out taking a photo, I'm going to think about, you know, whether it's the plates or the Hershey Kisses or the staged Pop-Tarts, right? I'm going to think about it twice, you know, like how I go about what I'm doing. And this is a process where we're all in the process of creating. Someone said on their blog post, like, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to do the Daily Shoot. I was like, what? No, it's not an option.
You failed.
This is not optional, right? I mean, this is what we do. This is how we do it. Now,
Martha had a question through Twitter. Would I consider hipstomatic cheating?
Okay.
Does anyone know what hipstomatic is?
No. Let's talk about it quickly, and then.
Okay. So there's this class of applications for smartphones. Hipstomatic is one that's available on the iPhone, and basically what it does, it pretends your iPhone is a crappy old analog film camera. So instead of taking a pristine 5-megapixel picture, it shrinks it and it craps it up and puts light leaks and stuff. It's gorgeous. I absolutely love that. I'm actually addicted to one called Instagram, which does basically the same thing. I love it because it makes the technical stuff absolutely impossible to worry about. You can't worry about, you know, exposure and all that kind of stuff. All you can worry about is what fits in the picture. What is the moment you're sharing? And so personally, I love these kind of things because it completely removes the technical aspects. And it adds this really funky aesthetic. I'll let this, maybe, I don't know if this is still loading, but I took one today. I was at the eye doctor and they did one of those pictures of the inside of your eye. So I took one using Instagram. And it just changes the colors. It's kind of a disgusting photo of the inside of my eye, but there's something that the process of making it look like the old analog film cameras, it's kind of fun. They're also cool because you share instantly. You take a picture, and as soon as you click done, it's uploaded to the web and put to your Twitter account and put on Flickr.
Yeah.
So you don't have to get back to your computer and get the USB cable. It's just boom, it's done.
Yeah. There's another good question I got yesterday, which actually your question reminds me of this idea of cheating and hipster. I don't have any of the iPhone stuff, so I don't know that. I see the Polaroid one that I think Alan's playing with and you've been playing with and Tom Woodward and some other folks. That looks interesting. I'm compelled by that. But the one thing that's interesting is someone said to me yesterday, they were like, as they were doing their first daily shoot, is it cheating to give other people ideas for their photograph? Who asked me that? Anyone here? Okay, Kelsey. I personally think absolutely not. If a group of people are around talking about what to take a photo of...
No, we can't have that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
There can be no collaboration, no discussion, no discourse.
We will have none of that!
You will take your pictures.
Exactly. You will make them your own, because that is only original thoughts.
Well, that's the thing. When you go through this, every picture you could ever imagine, someone else has taken it. It's probably better than what you're going to take.
Yeah.
I deal with that every time I take a picture. The reason I take a picture anyway is because I was there. It's my moment that I'm sharing, not the standard postcard thing. I'm sharing my moment, not somebody else's better version of that moment.
Yeah, and I think that was a great question by Kelsey, because I think, once again, it helps us feature what we're doing here. I mean, we're collaboratively working towards creating art as a group together, both for ourselves and our own space, but we can only make sense of it, and this brings me back to the point about Flickr, Darcy, that is, it's still kind of interesting to me, is how do we make sense in this space? Because we feel the noise and we feel all the things, and as David said before class, you know, sometimes I feel like my head's going to explode because there's so much coming at me right now with this class. Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of that is finding your own frequency on which to start creating.
Have you created a DS106 group on Flickr?
I did not create. Is there one?
I don't know. There should be.
There should
and
be.
Then all you guys can join in there. The Flickr groups come with discussion. All you guys, the Flickr groups come with discussion boards and all that kind of stuff, and a group pool. So every photo that you want to share with the group, you throw in there, and it goes into the group Flickr the group photo pool. Really handy way. I built one for the University of Calgary. I built a few others for Calgary related stuff. And it's a really neat little sort of community tool to create this group. So if you didn't, somebody should go do that. Create a group. You'll poke around the Flickr interface to see how it's free. And then anybody who wants to join it, throw your photos in there. We need for discussion boards, you know, all that stuff. We look for the photo a day, the 365 photo stuff, and it's got something like 650 members and 8 billion photos or whatever, and now it's just insane how the activity goes. But yeah, you look cool. They're happy.
This is Aaron, Calgon Wagon. For those of you out there in the DS106 world who are wondering about those Twitter bots, Aaron, take a look.
Hey, good job, cool. I post-process every photo that I take. It's got a key. Remember, I delete 90% of the photos, and 90% of my photos get processed by getting thrown out. Everything else, I've actually got, I'm going to put some loads together, I'm going to load an aperture again. And I'm going to go back to today. And I'm going to create a new version. I could be having a stroke or something, and I'm not able to find eggs. Okay. Let's do that. So what I've got, I'll let it wait for a minute to load, but I've got a preset for all the stuff that I do. And so all I have to do is go to my aperture adjustments thing, go to the photo they want, go to presets, and I've got something I call the denormative effect. And it does a bunch of automatic stuff. So it does things like bumping up the contrast a little bit, not a bunch. I'm not looking for cartoony, overly saturated. It bumps up the saturation a little bit. It brings down the highlights a little bit, because sometimes white stuff is too hot. Basically I do that to every photo. Some photos, especially if I shoot with my DSLR, if you shoot raw, you need to post-process. Think of that more like developing film than butchering a photograph. If raw, it really just is an unprocessed file. You need to do something to it to make it look the way you saw it. And so I do things like, if it's a raw photo, I do like the auto exposure adjustment and probably auto curves. That's usually all I do. I've also got a preset, sometimes I want stuff to be black and white, I've got a preset that mimics Kodak Tri-X film. And that's what I usually use for my sort of, you know, stuff that I want to make to look like an old black and white photo. So those are the two presets that I use the most. My main effect in Kodak Tri-X. Every photo that I keep gets one of, almost always one of those two. I don't spend a lot of time, because remember I said I'm lazy, so I want to get through this stuff as quickly as I can. But yeah, post-processing is good. And it's a personal style thing. Some people post-process very little and it works great. Some have a very specific style. Mine, every time it works well, it seems to work reasonably well. If I don't, I just I turned off the processing of that photo. I don't know if you can see that, but basically it, the colors are a little less saturated. I'm not looking much at what I get when I'm processing. For me, I'm trying to match what I saw, not any kind of fidelity. Sometimes, not usually, again, I'm lazy, but sometimes, I could have cropped this one here, in the top corner, trying to crop it a little bit. Generally, I don't, unless it's something huge that, I try to crop the camera. If you really want to crop it, you zoom it or you frame it a little bit differently. But if there's something like, the thumb in the corner, which I do have a lot, the iPhone is so easy to get your finger in front of the stupid lens. So I end up cropping a few of those just because, sometimes I'm riding my bike and I've got my glove and it sneaks in front of the lens and you don't notice because you can't really see too well until you're attempting to get. So sometimes I crop that, generally not so much.
Okay, and I was going to talk to you, the final thing I was going to talk to you, I forgot it. One of the things that's interesting as I'm looking at these, because we didn't actually get your aperture didn't show up on our screen.
Oh, you're not crap.
No, it's not a big deal.
Well, imagine if you will.
I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about what we're seeing on the actual, on the screen. If you noticed yesterday, one of the things that's interesting to me, I mean, Tommy Fabiz brought up all this stuff, and that's kind of a theme of what he made it say. But you'll start seeing, look at those pictures of Jeff's there. Well, it might be someone in the online set. But I love the kind of concept of in a particular daily shoot of a piece. Whether it be, we had David last year after that, and we had a lot of folks great to put pictures of the grip, right? And the kind of repetition of the grip for all of us. I'm not surprised by all of our but also, there was this idea of the stairs and this kind of leading. Right, and Todd Dole took a picture of a staircase. I took a picture of a staircase. There was another staircase here. And it was amazing to me, also, there was a whole repetition on walls. Andrew's photograph of this crazy... Andrew, what was that with the cigarette? Where is it? It's in your house? That is so sitting in the hallway. I absolutely love, I love that photo, but I also love the fact that the cigarettes are like alpine cigarettes. They're looking more cigarettes. I think the photo in like 1950. But also the idea of there's a couple of, I thought that was maybe on a wall somewhere. I couldn't really tell from the photo, but that one. Brian Lamb took a photo of the wall. You had this great photo taken of the cars, right? You had this kind of like repetition. Wow. It was really fascinating to me. We talk about the idea of finding a pattern of people you're going to follow in the class, people you're going to work with, people you're straight alongside of. That's what I really like to talk about today. But also the idea of photography is finding, taking those photos is like finding the pattern. I see your photography and your bike riding to work as intricately related. Because you really started to build nuts with the photography and you started to kind of say, look, I want to bike ride to work every day and I've done 3,000 kilometers to get pumped and I'm about ready to break, breaking away. Like you started all that crap and then you had the whole like, here's how many miles or kilometers I did 50 and then you had it all broken down into like,
when I started doing the bike riding thing, it started off with, this is beautiful, I need to share this. A lot of people don't see, they're stuck in a car, they're stuck in the exhaust on the freeway getting to work instead of, riding along the river valley. So it started off with that. Then I ended up copying an idea. Every idea was copied. by Dave King, who's another photographer in Calgary who rides a bike. And what he did is every 100 kilometers, I don't know if that even a mile off, but every 100 kilometers he takes a photograph as a motivation tool. And so that he wants to basically see how many photos he gets in a year riding a bike. And I kicked her ass. I got like, you know, 50-some-odd photos last year. So that was the whole point, trying to see if I could beat him on that. And then I just, the motivation tool of that stuck. And I couldn't stop doing it. You'll find a lot of the stuff once you get into it can be very addictive. What, I can't stop taking pictures. I can't stop taking pictures of random kilometers. I can't think, you know, all the stuff that becomes part of what you do, who you are. It's kind of strange.
And a lot of them actually stuck with the idea of doing a photograph, not a day necessarily, but actually focusing in on photography, what it means to this stuff, what it means to the rest of the photo. And it was some of the most rewarding stuff. I had a student who basically went to the library regularly, read all these photography books, and then talked about what it meant to her and how her photographs were kind of measuring up to this stuff. And I really like that because it's completely like self-directed project. I'm not a photographer. I can't tell at all. I'm not a photographer. Maybe that was a photo. No, you could really have done better if you thought about the script that you got it out of that. I don't care about it. But she could. She could frame it. She could see the interest she has in it. And she could run it. And that's kind of what I want you to think about in your digital stories. You know, kind of larger thing. About week 6 or 7, we're going to meet about this. And we're talking about some of your ideas kind of locked in week 7. You have a digital story. But Darcy, we're just about out of time. But before we do, any final questions? No? Okay, Darcy, we want to thank you very much for coming here.
Thank you.
All right, you have a good one, bud.
All right, later.
Thank you.
See you guys.
All right. Now, and that is going to be it for DS106 Radio. Back to your regular